Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Cool Zone Media.
Hi everyone, it's James. We just wanted to let you know that some new shit has come to light since we recorded this. Specifically, a former staffer of World Central Kitchen who resigned, who was of Palestinian descent, wrote an op-ed, I guess, in Mondawais, which is a publication that covers Israel and Palestine and the United States' role there. And it's given us some more information about World Central Kitchen that we didn't know when we first recorded this. And so we are going to address that at the end. So after the second ad break, Charles will go, Shireen and I will come back, and we're going to address some stuff that we found in that op-ed. We will also link it in the description to this podcast.
Yes, it's a really good article. I recommend you guys give it a full read. But yeah, we will be talking all about it at the end, so please listen to the whole episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to It Could Happen Here. Today, I am joined by my illustrious colleague, James. Hi, James.
Hi, Shireen.
And my now friend, Charles McBride. Hi, Charles. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, now friend, Shireen. It's wonderful to be here and to know that you're a real person and not a federal psyop.
Yeah. Fun fact, I have met Charles in person, but I have not met James in person. And I think that's pretty funny.
That's why I got colleague and Charles got friend.
No, I don't.
Don't think we're not taking notes over here, Shireen.
Don't read into that. Okay.
We're
talking about World Central Kitchen and the tragedy that happened last week in which 7 aid workers were killed. Both of these gentlemen have personal experience with the organization, so I thought it would be good to talk about. But James, take it away.
Okay. So yeah, I think we should maybe start off, Charles, you and I have both seen World Central Kitchen in different places. Like my longest experience with them was starting in 2018 in Tijuana, right? When we were trying to feed people who were part of a caravan of migrants who had arrived right before the midterms. And what was a relatively normal thing became a really big political sort of football, which resulted in the people remember, like people being tear gassed in Mexico from inside the United States, people being held first in a baseball stadium and then in an old strip club, which was really gross. And there being essentially no NGO presence at first, and then mutual aid presence, and then World Central Kitchen were one of the first people to show up and cook for people. And like at this point, there was a really dire need for food. Like I have this vivid memory of three of my friends and I riding in a bed of a pickup truck into this refugee camp and people just mobbing for food and water. And like, people were good about like not stamping on children once we stopped. But like, I was really worried there was going to be a crash. People were very hungry and very thirsty. And I had just had massive respect for people showing up and just being like, we are people who cook food. And what we're here to do is cook food. And these people are hungry, so we're going to give it to them. And so I've always been admiring of their work since then. And I wonder, Charles, like what your sort of initial experience was with them, and if you could describe like sort of what you, sort of work you've seen them doing.
Yeah. So first experience that I had with World Central Kitchen was actually hands-off. It was when my friends and I, we created this thing 4 years ago called the FarmLink Project, which is a food rescue organization. It basically finds food that's going to waste on farms and pays the wages of the truckers and the drivers to transport the food to food banks that are overworked. We sort of tagged in with World Central Kitchen in the beginning of COVID and talked with them a little bit, but there was never an official partnership. Some of their comms people gave us advice. Some of their fundraising people gave us advice. First time I ever saw them in operation was coming into the Zhemesh train station week two of the Ukraine war. And they were the organization feeding all the refugees coming in. It was a bunch of people in World Central Kitchen. And the thing I noticed was none of them were speaking English. They were all speaking Polish and Ukrainian or Russian. And I started to realize this is an organization that knows how to mobilize a local population and a local response as a part of their thing. And that's something I really noticed when almost a year later, I flew from Ukraine to Turkey when a 7.5 magnitude earthquake went through southeastern Turkey, Kurdistan. And I flew into Adana and then basically linked up with the World Central Kitchen people in the city of Osmaniye. And one of the things I noticed was how quickly they were able to get into Syria when nobody else was getting into Syria. And the reason is because it's just chefs. It's just using chefs in restaurants in places where they already exist. Every place in the world has chefs and restaurants. And Jose Andres has this amazing quote that I really like. He says, everyone already works for World Central Kitchen. They just don't know it yet. And I saw that in action. I saw all these kitchens transformed into, you know, shelters and food distribution sites. And I got to work alongside their team. So my project, I was trying to fundraise for heaters and blankets to heat the Afad tents in the affected regions in Kurdistan, in the Kurdish villages on the border with Syria, because it was still very cold at that time. And there was not, you know, adequate attention paid to that. Obviously, Afad and its cronies is part of the whole reason that incident was as bad as it was. But World Central Kitchen stepped up in a big way in Turkey. And I was really impressed with kind of their outfit. We were working out of the same distribution center. You know, I got to accompany Jose Andres on a couple of his deliveries. And we went to Hatay and walked around and saw the extent of the devastation and visited all the World Central Kitchen feeding sites. And it was all Turkish people and Kurdish people who were there working for World Central Kitchen. They had been mobilized by this entity. So there's this decentralized element to World Central Kitchen that I found really impressive. It didn't feel like the top-down bureaucratic thing I kept running into in my humanitarian work with these big NGOs. It was much more grassroots, much more bottom-up. So it gained a lot of respect for me in that sense.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to make. They do have a different model. It allows them to be flexible. It's allowed them to be places where other people aren't. Like, I think a lot of people perhaps like are not as familiar with the NGO world as you and I might be. NGOs often present themselves in places where people need help. It's like, you know, they have large office buildings and white Land Cruisers, and they have one way of doing things, and it's their way. And sometimes that doesn't work. I can recount countless examples of this, right? NGOs that exist to do things in a certain way and don't adapt to a local situation or culture. And that's something the World Central Kitchen have done really well, in my experience, all over the world.
Yeah, they graft themselves onto a local response. And everywhere that they go, it takes on a local flavor. And I think it's that's why this happened, is because they inserted themselves into a highly volatile situation. And because they are so decentralized and because they are so on the ground, they also exposed themselves to the realities of what Palestinians have been facing in Gaza and lost members of their team, you know, as a result. And I think that is part of that is there's a lot of people who won't even go into Gaza, you know, if they had the opportunity. Like you said, these big NGOs. I think last time I was on the podcast, Shireen, I talked about, you know, seeing these big UN advertisements in the Copenhagen airport saying "Save Ukrainian children" when I was going over there. And then as soon as I got there, I mean, the minute you go east of Lviv, you're not going to see a UN truck anywhere. And it was that way for 9 months, you know, it was just a bunch of people with like brand new white Land Cruiser Prados sipping cocktails in Lviv while subcontracting with actual humanitarians working closer to the front line. World Central Kitchen is not that way. They were all the way out. All the way out in the east. Everywhere I went, there was World Central Kitchen cars, even deep into Donetsk. And that was really impressive. It felt antithetical to the whole nonprofit industrial complex model that I'd become familiar with. And I was impressed by that.
Yeah. So perhaps we should speak about exactly what they were doing in Gaza, because I think people are perhaps a little confused. There's been a lot of like misinformation from all kinds of angles about what they were doing in Gaza. So do you have a good handle on that?
I mean, World Central Kitchen positioned itself. They engage in slightly more activist humanitarianism than most organizations, which is why, I mean, Jose Andres went big on Ukraine. He was there. He brought the whole team. I mean, they dedicated so many resources to Ukraine. And for him, it was unequivocal. Ukrainians are the good guys. Russians are the bad guys. We're helping the victims of this conflict. And, you know, we're on the side of the angels in this. And that was the positioning. And I think it was a bit of a wake-up call when, after October 7th, he did the same thing in Israel and went and, you know, gave food to the different kibbutzim that were affected by the October 7th attacks. And at first, very much positioned himself as like, we're here to help relieve the affected Israelis, which again, for like polite liberals in the humanitarian world, you know, Israel, Ukraine, both aligned with Western interests, Western values, theoretically. And I think, and then, you know, suddenly the war focus goes from what happened in the kibbutzim to what's happening in Gaza. And so they went to Egypt and they started helping the refugees, and then they tried to get into Gaza. Then they did get into Gaza. And they set up, you know, an effective system of food aid. And I started to notice while that was happening that the perspectives of a lot of the people that I was working with in the aid community were starting to shift on this whole thing. People who didn't have a political interest in supporting the Palestinians and were just kind of supporting Israel because of the default. When they actually went to Gaza, they started to really change their tune. And you see this a little bit with Jose Andres as well. I think Jose Andres was, yeah, I mean, this in terms of his personal views on Israel, they seem to have very clearly evolved. You can see very soon after October 7th, he is calling out the Spanish prime minister on calling what's happening in Palestine a genocide. He's saying that Israel has a right to defend itself. And then he spends a bunch of time in Gaza, and now he's greeting everyone in Arabic. And then this thing happens, and he immediately points the finger at Israel. He says, "You guys targeted my team. You killed them deliberately, and you made sure the job was finished." And that is just so reproachable. And in doing so, he became one of the only like really big celebrity voices to make what appeared to be something of a 180 turn on that conflict. And pretty much everyone that I've worked with in the humanitarian or journalism space has also done the same thing in regard to Gaza. I'd say most people thought my views on this were too extreme after October 7th, when I began immediately criticizing Israel. And now the ones who have actually been there pretty much unequivocally say they're the bad actor in this region. And I think you saw that shift happen in real time with sort of the attitude that World Central Kitchen took to Gaza. all of that stuff is available from public statements. You know, I don't want to share private sentiments that have been shared with me by members of Royal Central Kitchen staff. Those are their own and they don't represent the organization. But I think even just watching the yo-yo of Jose Andres' perspective on this change has been enlightening.
Yeah, and I think like it's easy to be critical of someone for having opinions which like have not aged well, right? Like, and sometimes that's okay. Sometimes we need to do that. It's like sometimes people say shit which is unforgivable. But like, I think in this instance, like we can be critical at a point, but I don't think now is the time for that. Like, I think now is the time for like everyone who wants the starving and killing of innocent people in Gaza to stop is on our side right now. And we need to welcome that. And like, there are a lot of people in this country, right, who we need to do that same 180. And giving examples of people doing that is good. Like, they, and there are a lot of people who don't see themselves when they see dead people in Gaza. And that's a problem, right? And that's some shit that they need to examine. And because there's a lot of bigotry there. But if they see themselves in those aid workers or they see themselves in Jose Andres. And look, when I saw the bodies of those aid workers, right, you have a tall, skinny British guy with long hair in a plate carrier with a badge on. Like, that's what I look like to 99% of the world. And it's hard not to feel like, oh, shit, like, that could be me. I feel like I have a lot of empathy for people in Gaza. I have friends in Gaza. We speak to them on the podcast. Shireen and I spoke to them last week. But whatever it takes for those people to change their opinions right now is what we need. Like, and we can dissect the how we got here later, but like every minute that this continues, more innocent people die. And if we can stop this 1 minute sooner, then there's important lives that we can save. And I think it's really important to focus on where we are, not like how we got here right now, if that makes sense.
As far as global conflicts go, I believe it's like 224 aid workers have died in Gaza, which is not a normal number in any kind of war. So that's according to the UN.
Yeah, 100 journalists, right? Like there is one person I can think of who I've worked with in Gaza who is still alive. Everyone I know has lost family members. And that's just my tiny slice. You know, I'm by no means as affected by this as most people. But yeah, the 3 times as many children have died since October in Gaza as are normally killed in conflicts in a year worldwide. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucking horrific. And we would do well to like put aside our differences and make it stop, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Opposition to genocide and wanting to end it should be a very big tent. And the fact that some people on the internet are trying to make it a smaller one doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It promotes infighting, which is not helpful right now. Yeah, it is helpful to not call it a war and continue calling it a genocide because that's what it is. So yeah, just continuing to change all the rhetoric around this genocide, I think, is important. This is also not the first time that Israel has directly targeted aid workers that are clearly labeled as aid workers. In 2006 in Lebanon, Israel struck a Red Cross ambulance right in the center of the logo, right on top of the truck, the van was a red cross, a clear red cross, and it struck right in the center. I think that image is now going around again. It's from 2006 again. It's not the first time that Israel has directly targeted aid workers, and I think it's really appalling seeing leadership in Israel just kind of apologize half-heartedly, being like, this was a mistake, and then they just move on. If this was the red line for people, I find that frustrating, but if it's finally the red line for people, I just hope it continues and people don't let it go.
There's that story that was absolutely fucking heartbreaking, right? Of that young girl who was trapped in her car, mm-hmm. and she called the ambulance and the ambulance came and they bombed the ambulance, right? And they killed her and they killed the ambulance drivers. Like, those two ambulance drivers were Palestinian. They were working for the Palestinian Red Cross, and like, they deserve every bit as much outrage as the World Central Kitchen people do. What they did with every bit is admirable. But like, if this is what it takes for people to change, then like, I hope that they will also acknowledge that everything else that happened before was an atrocity too. Talking of like atrocities, we have an advertising break now.
That was good, James. Good job.
Hey,
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Charles, you recently got some online attention for a video that you posted that was highlighting the vast imbalance of attention that the targeted assassination of the aid workers got in comparison to the murder and genocide of Palestinians. Specifically, people were talking about how there was also a Palestinian driver who was murdered along with the aid workers, and his name was not getting mentioned. His name is Saif Issam Abu Taha. And just a reminder of how frustrating it is that this had to be the red line for people, there are over 33,000 people in Gaza who have been murdered, nearly half of which are children. There are probably thousands more who are trapped under the rubble, and other thousands that are just unaccounted for because of the bombing of hospitals and the lack of records. So to have the killing of 6 aid workers be a red line for people, that's what I mean by saying it's frustrating, because it is a tragedy. But tragedy has been taking place for the past 6 months and also the past 76 years. So yes, the video that Charles made got some well-deserved attention, and I'd love for you to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so this was like a strange convergence of things for me, because I had been keeping up with the WCK team as they went into Gaza. I'd actually even been in conversations with some of them about potentially going there, but I hadn't, I mean, like, these were just buddies from a humanitarian trip. I mean, you know, like James probably knows, you make friends really fast when you're connected, when you're in these sorts of scenarios. And, you know, I made friendships while I was in Turkey that I've maintained. And, but then my Palestinian advocacy was separate. You know, I'm over here educating and everything. And then suddenly there's this convergence of like former, you know, coworkers on this team dying. And then it being the fault of this regime that I've spent the last 6 months trying to educate people on why it's bad. And I posted a video, which was my tribute to the fallen WCK employees who were very close friends of people that I got really close to on that project. And it was a tribute to them and also a way of pointing out how their martyrdom has overshadowed the martyrdom of so many Palestinians who will never get the kind of press and attention that they did. And I think it achieved that effect. The video went very, very viral. It's exceeded 1 million views on TikTok. It's at around 250,000 on Instagram, and more than that on the accounts that have reposted and shared it, sometimes without the context that I am not a World Central Kitchen employee, nor do I represent the opinions of the organization. And one of the things that I think made that story go viral is that I did shift the attention to, I said, this is a genocide. And I said, as grieved as I am at the loss of these people that I have this connection with, I do want to point out that it is overshadowing the horrendous loss of life of Palestinians. And I think that resonated with a lot of people. It also resonated with my friends at WCK who reached out to say, we appreciate you using your platform to talk about this, especially considering the fact that WCK employees are not really supposed to be making statements online about this. So they have a little more leeway with that, considering the fact that the head of the organization has explicitly now condemned Israel for this strike. But I've had some very interesting conversations with friends of mine that either still work or are connected to the organization. And that's a slightly complicated thing because World Central Kitchen subcontracts with so many different people. So at any given point, there are people who are connected to World Central Kitchen who are not representatives of the organization or technically employees. So, you know, you can't say definitively, this is what the majority of people in WCK feel about Gaza or Israel or anything. You know, different people have different opinions about that whole situation.
I think what you tried to do was obviously not to represent them, and it would be disingenuous to anyone to suggest you did, but the internet does that. I want to talk about one more, talking of disingenuous things on the internet, I guess. There was this thing that went around immediately in the aftermath of the photos coming out of the different people's corpses, that like it seemed to be mostly like tankies or perhaps people who still believe that they can generate revenue from views on Twitter, saying that like because these people had a security team, the security team was somehow spies, and this is evidence they were working for Israel, right? Like, and you can speak to your experience, Charles. Like, I've worked with security teams and seen people working with security teams all over the fucking world because war is dangerous and you have the thing that everyone needs.
If you have the misfortune of being a veteran of the global war on terror, you have a very few outlets for your skill set. One of those is providing security for humanitarian actors and journalists. And that is one of the most pro-social applications of your skill set.
Yeah, there are a lot of worse things to do with those skills, believe me.
Right.
Very good point.
So I have encountered a lot of people in my time in Ukraine and elsewhere who have decided to turn their sort of military intelligence background experience into, you know, well, okay, I'm good at this. I'm familiar with these types of scenarios. And if there's one thing I'm decent at, it's, well, at least trying to keep people safe and give them intelligence. And that is that's never a guarantee, but in all the people I've met who actually are legit, you know, security consultants or just veterans who have applied their skills towards a pro-social humanitarian purpose are pretty good guys. And while I'm sure, you know, there are some of them who are connected to various, are still connected to sort of the intelligence services of their various countries, I think that's definitely a possibility. A lot of them are not. They're just veterans who are trying to help. And this is a way that they can make a living while doing something that has a low moral hazard. So, I dismiss that stuff. There's a lot of conspiracies. The problem is, I mean, in the vacuum of the sort of post-manufacturing consent world where none of us trust the Western liberal media, a lot of people trust stuff that's even dumber, including like takes on the internet that somebody pulled out of their ass. And a lot of it is, if you have set yourself up against everything that comes out of the West, then everything that looks like a fingerprint of an intelligence agency or anything is going to ring your alarm bells. Obviously, you know, James, I feel like Ukraine is a great example of this. The fact that the United States supports Ukraine means that Ukraine must be the villain, and that the entire thing must be a CIA psyop, and there's spies everywhere, and I'm a spy for going to Ukraine and helping grandmothers get their insulin. All of those things have been said about Ukraine, about me, about, you know, that sort of thing. And we know it's not true. It's just that people, I mean, these, as far as I know, these were guys who were security consultants, very similar to, I work with a lot of British veterans of the global war on terror, basically on various different projects, some of it having to do with PTSD, others having to do with environmental conservation, some of whom have worked in Palestine and been in the West Bank. And I think Brits, by and large, have a more sane perspective on Palestine than people in the US do. I've just noticed that there are like fewer ultra-Zionist Brits than Americans.
I think our politics is less dominated by that perspective. There are ultra-Zionist British people, but yeah, it's also just, I think, a little bit harder to live a life in Britain where you don't know, if not Palestinian people, Arab people and Muslim people, right? And that complete demonization and dehumanization of Muslim people that the Western media did for 20 years to manufacture consent for war that wasn't about weapons of mass destruction or women in Afghanistan. It doesn't stick the landing quite so well when, like, you have friends and you can kind of see through the nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, I think the percentage of, like, evangelical Christians was probably much less.
No one's breeding a fucking red cow in England to take it to this third temple that I know of.
That was one of the things I was going to point out is I don't think you even have to know, like, to be a Zionist, you don't even have to know Jewish people in the U.S. I was raised an ultra-Zionist without knowing a single Jewish family because I came from an evangelical community in South Carolina that was very Christo-nationalist, very kind of culturally dispensationalist, even though my family wasn't dispensationalist. It was all about in times you support Israel because that's where, you know, that's where Jesus is going to come back. So yeah, I remember, I mean, we even had like fake Passover ceremonies in our church. God, this is bringing up some interesting.
Into the trauma box.
But truly, I mean, one of my early sort of, I would say I was completely anti-Zionist before I was even a leftist. And part of that reason was because I got to know a Palestinian friend in Washington, D.C. while sharing a desk with an Israeli conservative and a liberal Zionist.
Wow, that is
like
a joke.
Yeah.
Like, these people walk into a bar. That's
yeah.
A crazy trio of people.
So I got pilled on Palestine. Part of it was because, like, I was a history major in college, so I learned historiography. I just never applied historiography to the Israel-Palestine conflict. And then having these two voices in my ear while, like, living and working in D.C., I was like, oh, I need to actually look into this. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say even before I was, like, a leftist, I was down on Israel. I figured they were not the good guys. And then I think reading The Fateful Triangle by Noam Chomsky really solidified that. And obviously, Ilan Pape kind of was the nail in the coffin for me. So, yeah, and speaking of, like, you know, what happens in D.C. and, you know, Americans' opinions on the Middle East, most of them are dog shit opinions because most people do not have some sort of strong point of reference to this zone. But it goes back to what we were saying about how being against genocide should be a very big tent, and we should resist efforts to make it smaller. Because I'm reading through The 100 Years War on Palestine right now, Rashid Khaldi. And one of the things that he said is how the war is fought in the United States, in Congress, because we hold the keys. So as much as it's as painful as it is to try and change the minds of dumb Americans with no geopolitical understanding, it's absolutely essential to holding Israel to account. It is actually one of the best things that you can do. And when someone who has the international appeal of Chef Jose Andres points the finger at Israel and said, "You killed my employees deliberately and you're starving Gazans," that goes a long way towards shifting the opinions of the people who actually hold the keys to everything Israel does.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And that's what we need to do, right? Like, stop them getting bombs to kill people, not argue on Twitter or you know, Instagram or what have you. Like, we need to make the killing stop. I wonder, like, you spoke, Charles, about like, knowing people. I know World Central Kitchen are no longer working in Gaza for the time being. From what I understand, is that still correct?
They've publicly announced that they're scaling back their efforts. Yes. I'm not sure if they're going to totally close down their operation. I think right now they're probably trying to reconsider their security protocols before making another step.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what, as there are things, of course, but like they did attempt to deconflict, I guess, and they were using a road which is designated for the use that they were using it for. And
I mean, Israel knew where they were. They have to report where they are. So, I mean, it would be fucking crazy if Israel attacked aid workers again right now.
But also, but, it's Israel.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, also, done crazier things, yeah.
But can we, like, dwell on that for a second? Like, Israel constantly boasts about its ISR capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
In ISR is intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Mm-hmm. So, like, Israel is constantly reassuring people that it is doing everything it can to avoid civilian casualties. It talks about its chain of command for approval. And in light of that, none of the things that they've said about this make any sense whatsoever. Yeah. Because yes, if their protocols, because they're either, it's like they can't decide what they're trying to gaslight the world into believing. Every claim that they're making is muddling what they're trying to get the world to believe about them. And it just gives everyone the distinct impression that they're recklessly incompetent, lying, evil, or potentially all three.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, even if you look, because I don't know why this is the thing that I do, I was looking at, like, trying to work out what munition Israel had used, right, to destroy those vehicles. And Israel they have a number of different sort of munitions that they could have used. But one of the things that they do, and the US does it too, but it's a bigger thing with Israel, is if they have inert or low yield Hellfire munitions, so like guided munitions that are fired from a helicopter or a drone. And they use them to do a thing that they call roof knocking, right? Which sounds maybe like you're like knocking on someone's roof. What you're doing is sending a missile through somebody's roof. And that is the means by which you alert them to evacuate the building because you're planning a larger strike. That in itself, yeah, we have this great ISR capability. And what do we do with it? We launch missiles into the homes of civilians, and then hopefully they will run away in fear for their lives so that more of them don't die when we blow up that block 10 minutes later. Like, it's right. Just, you know, you have to look at what's happening, not what's being said, I guess.
But no, they're absolutely allergic to accountability. And I think you can see just how far they've been able. They're scrambling now because they've been able to get away with so much for so long. And their excuses are falling apart because they're alternatively depicting themselves as a highly disciplined and professional, you know, army. Or that they're just making mistakes because it's war. And that people should get off their back because no one holds anyone else to the same standard that they hold Israel. So it's like, which is it? Like, what are you trying to get the world to believe? Are you either this like crack disciplined unit with a very sophisticated chain of command and an AI software that you're really proud of for targeting? Or is this the fog of war and you're just making mistakes and everyone makes mistakes and we should get off your back for it? Because you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The civilian casualties are too high for you to have it both ways. So either you are making mistakes and too many people are getting killed and you're violating the laws of rule, or you're doing it deliberately, which is worse.
Yeah. People can make up their own minds, I guess.
Charles, thank you so much for joining us today. I really respect all the work you do, and I am grateful that you have shared your voice with our audience once again. Where can people find you on the internet if you want to be found?
Thank you, Shereen. Yeah, just you can find me pretty much everywhere except Twitter with Charles McBride, and that's McBride with a Y rather than an I. It's on Substack, Instagram, TikTok, and my website, charlesmcbride.com, will be live at this point.
Nice.
When this episode drops. So if you want to support the humanitarian work I've been involved in Ukraine, you can support Mission Kharkiv. On Instagram, it's mission.kharkiv. And their website is missionkharkiv.com. And if you're looking for an org that is already working in Gaza to provide life-saving aid in the wake of, you know, UNRWA being gone, World Central Kitchen now pulling out, Anera pulling out. Global empowerment mission is still there and still fulfilling a lot of the same functions that those organizations were doing.
Thank you so much, Charles.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Shireen and James from the future here, giving you an update about the article that we mentioned at the top of the episode. So the title itself is "I Resign from World Central Kitchen Because They Refuse to Tell the Truth About the Israeli Genocide in Gaza." The ex-staffer is Ramzi Talhami. The article itself has some really damning information about WCK, so we're going to get into it. He says, for months, World Central Kitchen leadership censored material coming out of its Gaza operation and refused to honor staff concerns about their work there. And even though they're finally taking a stand after its personnel have been murdered, it is much too late. So he resigned in early March of this year, and at the time, he was the only staff member of Palestinian descent at WCK. And there is an amendment there. He says that while WCK hired many Palestinian contractors in Gaza and Egypt, he was the only Palestinian with staff status following the departure of one other longtime employee. And he resigned in protest of the extensive, unexplained censorship regarding Gaza at the organization. They talk about how in December 7th of last year, they sent a letter to WCK's executive team. And that letter called for WCK to join other regionally active NGOs in calling for a ceasefire and condemning Israel's blockade, as well as conforming its language and coverage of Gaza to the standard that was set by the coverage of Ukraine, as well as stopping meal service in Israel. It got 43 signatures, and the WCK executive team declined to meet up with the people that signed the letter, and they failed to respond to any inquiries. And they also actively still served the meals in Israel while the second day of the ICJ genocide hearing was happening in January.
There's one paragraph that I wanted to highlight as well, just because I think it's very crucial when we're discussing the fact that these people died working for Central Kitchen. And that's this paragraph that I'll just pick up halfway through. In another instance, a video of a WCK kitchen caught in an IDF bombing was put on hold entirely. it appears this incident, as well as the fact that WCK personnel were aboard a UN convoy that was bombed, have not been mentioned anywhere externally. Like, I think that's a really crucial getting off point. You can have shit politics, but if you're not saying stuff when your people are getting bombed, or like until they're getting killed, A, I don't know what's wrong with you. And B, if you didn't change things, and I don't know if they didn't change things, right? That's not detailed here, but like you have to change things if your people are being bombed. Like if I'm working somewhere where that's a likelihood, you know, like if we get bombed once and we're lucky enough to be okay, we do not continue doing the same shit. And I'm not entirely sure that they did. I don't want to for a moment suggest that like the people who died were in like complicit, right? That's not what I'm saying. It's not what Shireen's saying. I very much understand the desire to go to places where dangerous things are happening and help the people who did nothing to deserve this. And I think the people who did that deserve our unending gratitude and respect. I'm not for a minute saying that that's not true. I'm saying that this organization needs to really think about how it does shit if it wants to continue operating.
And yeah, the blame is on the executives of this organization. The article also talks about how the character of WCK's relief response to Gaza, it was like revealed very early on after October 7th. The chief communications officer, Linda Roth, she had put out a statement without the communications team's input, which is apparently breaking precedent. And it was about how Hamas attacked Israel with no mention of the Palestinian lives that were lost. And then 3 days later, Jose Andres posted a video to WCK's Instagram where he only makes reference to the October 7th attack with no mention of the climbing Palestinian death toll at the time or the blockades. And then on social media, Charles mentioned this at the episode. On October 16th, he tweeted at the Spanish Prime Minister to be removed for her protest of the Israeli tactics. And at the same time, WCK continued to work closely with the IDF over the course of the relief response. The initial statement, as well as Andre's video, were decisions that were made by leadership against the concerns of the WCK personnel. There's this paragraph that I want to read just verbatim. Much of the work in a genocide is not pulling the trigger, but instead minimizing and denying that a genocide is going on. Genocide is a phenomenon of gradual boundary pushing. Each increment must be accepted by the parties with agency for the next to be reached. Under the direction of CEO Aaron Gore, Linda Roth, and, quote, Chief Feeding Officer Jose Andres, World Central Kitchen recklessly endangered its personnel, selflessly exploited the situation for its own benefit, and actively participated in the normalization of an ongoing genocide.
I think what I want to say more broadly here, it's my stance, I guess maybe other people share it, maybe they don't. This situation is not going to be solved by NGOs, and it's certainly not going to be solved by NGOs which have this very explicitly neoliberal political agenda, right? Like, at best, they can plug a hole in a leaky bucket. And it's good when they do that, right? If one less person starves, that's good. It doesn't mean they don't have to be perfect to help, but they don't get to be exempted from criticism because they're helping, right? Like, World Central Kitchen didn't want to help us at the border in Hukumba. My friends reached out. They didn't want to do that. Yeah, I don't think you should expect NGOs to share your radical politics. It doesn't mean that they can't do harm reduction, and it doesn't mean that when they are doing harm reduction, they sometimes need your money. And if in the situations where this is happening, you should give it to them if you can't help more directly, right? But like, you know, if we look at their communications, we do see them calling for a ceasefire, which is about what you can expect from an NGO, you know, or we'd actually, it appears that we see Jose Andres calling for a ceasefire, and we see World Central Kitchen saying Jose Andres called for a ceasefire. Which I don't quite know why they don't just say we are calling for a ceasefire. They didn't sign that document with the other NGOs. Like, I don't know if they're trying to play like have it both ways. I don't know. I'm not privy to those conversations, right? They didn't sort of wholeheartedly say this is a genocide, but they have to get permission for Israel to do stuff. I mean, now they're saying it, but after the atrocity that happened, the whole world is watching, right? Not that the whole world shouldn't have been watching from the start. But like, I don't think NGOs are ever going to be, you know, as radical as people on the internet want them for. They're also there doing stuff and people on the internet aren't. So, you know, we have to respect that. And I don't want any of this to take away from the fact that some people from all over the world, right? From Europe, from Australia, from the United States, have died feeding people who needed to be fed, because like that's the most any of us can give is our lives, right? And so I don't for a minute want any of this to detract from the sacrifice they made, nor should their sacrifice be held in any higher regard than the sacrifice made by hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinian aid workers, right? People working for the Palestinian Red Crescent, a Palestinian, even the Palestinian people working for international NGOs, right? Or the United Nations people who have been killed, right? None of those sacrifices should be ignored or undermined, because those people have certainly given a lot more than I have. I don't have any right to say that. I think, yeah, this org, it changes communications, right? I think they've obviously realized that, like, there is no nicely about this. Like, you have to call a spade when it comes to what's happening in Gaza, which is a deliberate and targeted attempt to kill civilians, thousands and tens of thousands of children even. And I think until we move the conversation on to one where that is being called by its name, that is to say genocide, then I don't think we'll see the reactions that we need. And I think they appear to have reflected on that. I wish they'd got there sooner, but they're there now. And I'm sorry that it took these people's lives to get there. But what I see from them is what I see from other NGOs. They're certainly not uniquely bad. In fact, they're better than very many NGOs. And they were there when other people weren't, and they're delivering food when other people weren't. So I don't want to distract from that. But this messaging, this internal conduct, like there's some of these internal messages, they are troubling. And like, again, it's just what I expect from any other NGO. Whereas I've seen these guys do things in many ways that are better than other NGOs. But none of that messaging takes away from these people giving their lives. And I don't want to suggest that.
I think the most telling thing is that they're making the biases of the top people that work for this company very evident. In the article, it goes into Linda Roth's background and her pro-Israeli stances in the past, and the fact that in all the outwardly facing materials about Gaza, it was very typical to change the word siege to conflict or to question the blockades. It talks about how the people at the very top, their biases just seeped through, and the people that were actually working for the organization were in disagreement with this. I think the last thing I want to read from this article just really highlights that WCK did not protect the people that worked for them. It says, save the possibility of genuine incompetence, the WCK leadership's decisions were not made to maintain neutrality, did not increase effectiveness, and, as April 1st demonstrated, did not protect personnel. The leadership's failure to honestly portray the dire reality in Gaza and lack of an attempt to influence the genocide in Gaza via its status and close ties to the Biden administration means that they bear responsibility for its outcomes. Let no one say they did everything they could. And this is obviously talking about the leadership versus the personnel. And then he goes on to close the article saying that his experience is one experience. And when he resigned, there was a palpable, widespread atmosphere of disappointment among the staff and employees. And he ends with just calling on current and former WCK employees, contractors, and volunteers to publicly share their stories as well, in order to force accountability and change.
Yeah. Look, if you work for Central Kitchen, you can message us. Like, I'm here to hear your stories. But yeah.
Yeah. We just wanted to make sure that this perspective was shared. And again, the article will be in the description, so please give it a good read. But yeah, that is the episode. Thanks for listening. Free Palestine.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional,
The CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.